Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have another great program for you today. Do you want to increase your opportunities for success in both your career and your personal life, and at the same time, be happier and more satisfied along the way? Well, my guest today is Christine Hoffbeck. She is an actuary and analytics expert who has been named a pioneer and trailblazer in her field. She is an in-demand keynote speaker and holds degrees from both the University of Pennsylvania and MIT. In 2017, Christine competed on CBS's hit reality television show Survivor, and she was the runner-up of season 35. She is also the author of the new book, Winning Conditions: How to Achieve the Professional Success You Deserve by Managing the Details That Matter. Today, she'll be discussing how to create your own winning story. For more information about Christine or her new book, please go to christinehoffbeck.com. So welcome to the program, Christine. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Terry. I'm so happy to talk with you today.
Me too. I'm excited about this show, Christine. Now, before we discuss today's topic and your new book, I have to ask you, and I'm sure everyone does, my son Joshua and I are true fans of the CBS show Survivor. We've watched you on season 35, Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. So briefly, tell us what the experience was like and what did you learn by being on the show?
It was, so what I say about being on Survivor is it's sort of like running a marathon, meaning that while it's happening, it's horrible. But when you look back on it, you're so proud of it. And then we all want to go out and do it again, right?
That's so,
playing Survivor is a real show. In fact, the question I'm asked most often is it real? Yes, it's real. We are really living outside. We are really starving. I really did not take a shower or brush my teeth for six straight weeks.
Wow.
Right?
That's
yeah.
a long time.
Yeah. So it's a really hard game. But a lot of us out there, I mean, we find out what really makes us tick. And you come back with this, I'll say, this lease on life. I mean, for me, it was when I finally stopped calling dreams dreams and instead calling them my to-do list, because I realized that as humans, like, we can do anything that we want to do. We really can. It's really an inspiring thing. But yeah, it was a hard, hard experience, both physically, mentally, strategically. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
We see that when we watch the show as well. But like you said, we just don't know if it's real. But one of the things that, I mean, it comes out when I speak to you now, as well as in your book, Winning Conditions, is your energy, is your optimism. As you know, I told you before we started that I really enjoyed reading your book. Your style of writing is easy and fun, and you have such great advice. And as I said, great energy. So what motivated you then, Christine, to write the book Winning Conditions?
So I will say to you that I have always been very interested in human behavior, and probably also why I'm a reality TV freak. I love to watch reality TV because I like to see how people behave. And I started to notice back in college, back when I started my first job, as I worked through my job and even just relationships with friends and things, like, I think we've all had experiences where we look around and we say, gee, you know, I'm working so hard. I'm so dedicated. I should be the best in my field. I've really studied this hard. why is everyone else getting promoted around me? Why is everyone else getting celebrated or recognized when I'm the one putting in the work? And this was something that was always very interesting to me. So it sort of created this lifelong quest of what I called winning conditions, right? Or this idea of, could I control the conditions around the delivery of my work that gave me the best chance to win? And when I say win, I don't mean we're all going to become CEOs, right? I mean being recognized, being trusted, being celebrated, being invited to have your seat at the table. I look at my survivor experience as a win. I didn't win the game, but to me, even being invited to play, that was a massive win for me, right? Mm-hmm. So my motivation was really just this sort of intrinsic interest that I always had in human behavior. I ended up talking to a lot of people throughout my career about their experiences, their roles. What did they experience? I went back to school. I studied behavioral economics and organizational processes at MIT. I read lots and lots of books, right? So this whole idea of winning conditions was born. And what I found was that when I started sharing my ideas, oh, these are some things that I think about it, the response was massive, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone just wanted to keep telling me their stories. Oh, here's what happened to me. Oh my gosh, what did you do? I started talking about it in presentations. There were always long lines of people afterwards who wanted to keep up the conversation. They wanted to email me afterwards. And so finally I thought, you know what? I'm going to sit down and write a book about this so that everyone can kind of, you know, get the ideas in their time that they have. So that was really where the idea or the motivation of writing the book came from.
I love that idea because it's really all about redefining success in a way. You know, my father, who is a psychiatrist, always asked these very provocative questions at the dinner table. And one that he kept asking Christine when I was a young child, and even now, what is your definition of success? And I think that comes out in your book as well. And your notion of winning conditions, that it's not a win, it is really making and creating your own story. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Sometimes it's gaining courage. It's gaining understanding of other people. It's finding ways to behave that give you grace and joy and go after the things in your life that you believe in. You know, I mean, I end the book talking with finally learning that I was enough. Right? Mm-hmm. Of going through my almost whole career and never even feeling like I was enough. And how did I finally find that? That was groundbreaking for me. So the idea of a win is different things to different people. And even finding a win in unwinnable situations, right? How can you find the positive in getting let go from your job? Right? Mm-hmm. How can you turn that into some sort of winning conditions? So it really is a framework for finding joy and grace and understanding and acceptance and feeling like you're enough and ultimately writing whatever is your definition of your winning story, because we all have a winning story.
We all do, don't we? And I can see listeners. I mean, I see them in my mind right now, and they're saying, you know, Christine, I don't think I'm enough. I haven't been able to, quote, succeed or do my story. And I look around at my friends or people, and they seem to be doing okay. And in your book, you share some simple and easy methods that listeners might be able to take with them. Can you share some of those today for us so that listeners can say, okay, maybe I am enough. I can succeed.
Sure. One of my favorite stories that I tell in the book, and I tell it right in the beginning, because I think this is something that we all experience. I had started my first job, and I'll tell you the story first and then how readers can take it away or listeners can take it away. When I first started my job, I started on the same day as this other woman. Her name was Rosalind. I'm still very good friends with Rosalind to this day. I love her to death. But we were new hires. We were doing exactly the same work every day. Same clients, same work. We had the same sort of educational background. Everything about us was very similar. And yet everyone kept talking about how amazing Rosalind was. They like loved Rosalind. They called her the Roz, you know, capital T, capital R, the amazing Rosalind. And I remember thinking, like, I am doing the same thing. Why are they celebrating her so much? And to be honest, I loved her too. Like, she was awesome, right? She's so great. And so, but instead of getting mad at her or undermining her or talking bad about her, I decided to actually stop and just watch her and become consciously aware of what she was doing differently than me. And what I realized was she and I were doing the same work. She was delivering it different. So the simplest example is when people would say to her, gee, Roz, great job on that work. What she would respond with is, thank you. I worked really hard on that project. Or thank you. I really enjoyed working on that project. And so what people learned from her is that she worked really hard and then they wanted to give her more challenging work that she enjoyed, right?
Right.
And when they said thank you to me, I responded differently. And I suppose I was trying to be humble or unpretentious or discreet. But when someone said, gee, Christine, great job on the project, I would say, oh, it wasn't a big deal. Oh, it was easy. I just did what we did last year. And so what people got from me was that the work I did was the easy work. I just copied what we did last year. And I realized that the way that I responded to people was influencing the way that they thought about me. Now, you can take this to your real life, right? How many times have you said to someone, I think as women, we do it a lot.
Absolutely.
I love your sweater. And we respond, oh, this old thing, I've had it for 10 years. Right? Why do we do that? It's just as easy to say, thank you. It's one of my favorites too. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you respond, and that's just a small detail that matters, but when you respond to people, you tell them how to think about you. And there are ways to respond that don't undermine other people. You're not bragging or boasting by saying, oh, thank you. This is one of my favorite sweaters. I wear it all the time. Right. You know, and I would say what your listeners could even try an example today. They could walk around and just compliment a few people and see what responses they get back. It's really surprising how the different responses will make you feel differently. And that's sort of the idea of winning conditions, right? These little things that we can just find that might change how people think about us.
And it's so simple, right? What we say or how we respond to a compliment or to someone saying something to us is so important to how they see us. And I would probably argue too, Christine, that it's not only what we say, but our body language as well. So that if we don't look confident, stand up tall, as well as say, yes, it took a lot of work, or yes, I like this outfit as well, we also give an impression to others.
That's exactly right. And I think that a lot of the concepts about winning conditions take the focus off of yourself and say, what can I give to others? Right? They look out and they say, what do other people need? How can I embrace their perspectives, their motivations? How can I have grace and understanding for other people? And what you'll find is that when you stop for a moment and stop just thinking about yourself in your own bubble and have this grace and love and understanding towards others, it all really comes back tenfold to you in creating just a happier life, a happier environment, more trust, more recognition, more celebration. And all of that creates your winning conditions.
I love it. Winning conditions. So first, you're really saying that you want to observe people around you and respond to people in a very confident, assured way, but also look to see what they need or what you think might be in their mind. And I know psychologists call that empathy as well. Other simple methods.
So beyond looking outward towards others, I also have, I would say that the last part of the book, or the first part of the book, is really looking outward towards others. The second part of the book is looking inwards toward ourselves. So how can I create experiences for myself that enable me to get myself out there? Things that are important to me. How can I find time? I sort of give an analogy about adding marbles to your urn. So what I talk about is you've got an urn full of marbles, and the white marbles in your urn are everything that you do in a given whatever day, week, month, year that you do just to sort of keep life going along, right? The things that aren't really accomplishing your goals, but you do it because it's part of normal daily life. Now, everyone needs to consciously think about adding red marbles to their urn. So their red marbles are the things that they do that they feel advances their goals. And it might be things like reaching out to a new person, or reaching out to a recruiter, or honestly, going to the gym is a red marble for some people. For me, it was applying to a reality TV show was a red marble. Anything that you do that is advancing whatever it is that you want to do in your life. And you need to make sure that you find time to add those red marbles to your urn. Because if you end up with a whole life of only doing what other people want out of you, you're not going to be able to cross those dreams off your list. They're not going to become part of your to-do list. You are important. You do matter. So, you know, I do sort of talk about that inner stuff. I talk a lot about promoting your own value. Other people don't automatically know how amazing you are. And every single person is extraordinary in their own way, right?
Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
Right. So how can we get those messages out there? So it is a bit about understanding others' motivations and perspectives, but it's also stopping for a minute and saying, I am an important person. I add value to this world. And so I'm going to go after the things also that are important to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, in your book, you also talk about in one chapter being magnetic, which is also looking within and making sure that you inspire other people to want to be around us as well. And I loved that chapter.
Right.
Thank you. More about that. You know, steps that we can take to be magnetic. I love that concept.
Yeah, so it's interesting because there are some things that you can do that make people want to like you, want to be around you. The reality is if people like you, if they want to be around you, if you are magnetic, then people are going to do what they can to help you succeed in life, in relationships, in everything, right? So we talk about things like, for example, working together towards a common goal. So this is actually one of the reasons why asking for help is not a sign of weakness. Some people think I should never ask for help because people think it is a sign of weakness. In fact, it has been proven through research studies that when people work together towards a common goal, they feel a sense of wanting each other to succeed. So sometimes if you're at work or even at home, right, with friends, with spouses, with your kids, if you can say, hey, can you help me with this? Can we do it together? Then, you know, that sort of builds a magnetism that they want you to succeed. I talk about finding positive associations with your work. How can you associate your work with something positive? I talk about seeking similarities, which incidentally is not the same as diversity. So studies have consistently shown that diverse groups are almost always more effective than homogenous groups. So how can we take people who have very diverse backgrounds, experiences, educations, geographies, and how can we find similarities so that they, you know, they feel more magnetic to each other? So there's ways that we can create magnetism that encourage other people to want you to succeed. And that's part of growing success. And that's part of, you know, having even just a happier, healthier work environment or even home relationships.
Even home relationships, exactly. I mean, having your kids, you know, work with you to achieve a goal, having your romantic partner together achieve something, you know, then both people are really invested in that goal and achieving the outcome. And I have to say, Christine, to go back to a message that you said that is so important that I say all the time to my clients and my students and everyone around me, that asking for help is a sign of strength and it is not a sign of weakness. And even as I say that, I get chills up my spine. I don't know about you, because there are so many people who don't ask for help. And especially now when there are so many challenges in our society, given the pandemic, we must realize that you are saying this, that I am saying this, that asking for help is a sign of strength.
I agree. And I think that some people sometimes are afraid to be vulnerable. They're afraid to admit that they don't know everything or that they made a mistake or they did something embarrassing. And, you know, sometimes that sharing of yourself fully in that way just creates a relationship creates a joy. I mean, I tell many stories in my book about the times that I've screwed up. I tell many embarrassing stories.
I agree. That one in the beginning, like of high school and everything went wrong and you were going to be president and lost. I mean, that's what you did. You were vulnerable right in the beginning and it creates a trust. It creates a bond.
Right. I tell a story about the time I got stuck in the elevator with the CFO of our 40,000 employee company and just made just a huge gaffe, which I felt, didn't share my value, didn't even share my full name. And I looked back on that and thought, that was such a mess up. Share it in my book so that other people don't do the same thing that I did. But I do believe that it is okay to say, oh, got that one wrong. I'll do it right the next time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to be vulnerable and to say, oops, I didn't do that right. How can I change for the next time? Now, one other topic that's so important, because as parents are homeschooling and helping their children with schoolwork these days, you talk about in your book how organizing your workspace can really boost your success. And I think that's true for parents, helping kids organize their homeschool space. Can you briefly talk about that?
Sure. So the example that I give about the book is organizing your space. And it has to do with this idea of something that is called the halo effect. So this is an example I use about the halo effect. So I'll explain what that is first. So the halo effect basically suggests that sometimes people will see one positive characteristic about you, and they will then unilaterally apply that to other characteristics about yourself. So if they see that you're working in an organized workspace or an organized desk, they might then think, oh, gee, that person is really organized. Their work must be organized. Their work is quality work, right? Why do we do this? We do this because we have human brains, and this is just something that happens in our human brain. Now, the opposite is also true. If someone sees something negative or perceives something negative about you, then their human brain may unilaterally apply this to other things about you. And I use this in the context of your workspace, that if you are at work or even with your kids, if you have a super messy work area and people take a look at it, they may think then that your work is also somewhat disorganized. Maybe you can't come to the table. Maybe you're going to miss a deadline. Is it true? It may not be true, but this is how the human brain works. And so winning conditions is kind of setting up the conditions that enable you to best get a win. So this is one of the reasons that you want to make sure that your workspace is presentable, that you are organized, that your emails are well written, you don't have spelling errors, things are well organized, because the way that you present those small things could lead to how people perceive your work. Right.
I love all this psychology. Such important advice. This is all psychology, and I love it, Christine.
It is. I will say I was very excited because my book was also reviewed by brain doctors.
Oh, and they liked it. They reviewed it well.
Yes, yes.
And now we only have like 1 minute left, Christine. If there's one message you want listeners to take away from this program, what might it be?
So what I want everyone to know is that they are valuable, that they are important. Everyone has their own kind of extraordinary inside of them. They are enough. They can do it. And if you're not feeling that way, then sometimes there are a few easy little things that you can change that can enable you to write your own winning story. But we are all capable of so much. We are all capable of, honestly, significantly more than we ever would even think possible. So I just hope that people come away just feeling stronger, feeling excited, feeling like their lives are going to be whatever they want them to be.
Very important message, Christine. Thank you so much. And I know I felt better after I read your book. So thank you so much for joining us. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Oh, you too, Dr. Terry. Thank you so much for having me on your program. I really appreciate it. Thank you for reading my book and enjoying it.
Absolutely loved it. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Christine Hoffbeck or her new book, Winning Conditions, please visit her website, christinehoffbeck.com. You can also find her on Facebook and Twitter at The Real Chrissy H or on LinkedIn at Christine Hoffbeck. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.